New commission member introduction. I don't have anything there or parliamentary procedure. I have heard that there are some new members maybe in process, so that would be good. Everybody have a chance to look at the minutes?
Move approval?
There's a motion? Second. And a second? Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Public comment on topics not on the agenda. I understand that we have two people who do have some comments for us. Come on up. Introduce yourself, and then you have 3 minutes each.
Okay. Can I sit here?
Sure.
Wherever there's a microphone, just make sure your microphone, make sure your mic's on.
Thank you. I'm going to pass you. My name's Janie Keister. My day job is working in the Madison Public Schools with families and students experiencing homelessness. And part of that work is working with the Early Childhood Homeless Work Group, which works with 0 to 5-year-old issues of homelessness. And then I also sit on the board for the Homeless Services Consortium here in Madison. So I'm here because we recently, with the Early Childhood Homeless Work Group, had a great conversation with Mick from Metro. And from that conversation, we really felt like we needed to do some advocacy on behalf of our families and our students who are experiencing homelessness through Metro. Now, we had a conversation just a little while ago. We're going to reconnect, but we really wanted the you guys to know what were some of our issues and what are some of our concerns would be so that we could share that at a broader spectrum and see if there's other supports that might be able to come forward for them. And on the early childhood end, some of the concerns that we have with Metro really are around access for families with strollers into the Metro bus. And for just access for no-income patrons to use the transportation. So homeless already, they have no housing. But the other challenge for us is that even getting from shelter to shelter or doubled-up place to doubled-up place, the only way to get there often is through Metro, through bus access. And when you don't have an income, it's really hard to access bus transportation. And when you have really young children, accessing the bus and having to fold your stroller up when all your life is piled on that stroller to start with makes it really difficult to access the buses at times. So just thinking out of the box, what ways could we be more accessible for our patrons who have no income? How can we, as agencies, be more able to access transportation on the Metro for our patrons so that if we know that they're no-income folks, how can we access bus rides or anything for them? And just really advocating that we want them to use the system, and it's the system that they want to use, but they often can't use the system because they either don't have the tickets to that or the income to purchase the tickets or the access to purchase low-income tickets because those are all sold on the east side and a lot of our families are spread around all of Madison, so they can't even access where the tickets are sold for low-income bus passes. So that's another challenge that they have. I think I've said enough. I'm going to let Katie share a little bit more.
Yeah, hi. My name is Katie. I work at the Salvation Army just down the street during the daytime. I also sit on our education and advocacy committee through the Homeless Services Consortium. And as a bunch of different service providers providing services to the most vulnerable populations in our community, we were able to come together and voice some of the different issues and challenges that the people that we work with every day and who the community resources should also be serving face when trying to access these resources. Jenny, you talked about a couple examples of that, just that there's not enough tickets for most of the time an entire family. So if there's more than one person in a family, we provide bus tickets to basically one person, the head of the household, to share with the rest of the family, or if it's just a single individual. And we can really only do like 4 bus passes a week per person, and if they're working full time, that's not really enough to get you back and forth. So we were hoping that we could have more low income bus passes available to purchase throughout the entire month, and free passes for those without any income. You know, they still have places that they need to get to and from. And then to have more vendors and locations, like Jenny said, most of our families are spread out all over Madison and not just on the east side. And when you look at where affordable housing is in Madison, there's not as much on the east side, and it's mostly on the west side area where there's no low-income passes available. We were hoping too for riders who use paratransit and riders who have a disability, they can only bring one person along. So, you know, oftentimes that has to be their caretaker, but then their child has to find another ride and can't ride with them if they don't have the money to also pay for that rider. Strollers. For people who are using strollers, people with children, it's just not that feasible to load that on and off of the bus. So those are a couple of the solutions that we saw for some of the issues that Jenny was able to outline.
And you noted that you were here available to answer questions. Did you want to wish to speak?
I could just add in a little bit. I know being late, I didn't want to, and my colleagues here still have covered all of the bases that we really talked about. So I'm J.L. Curry. I am with the YWCA Madison and part of this advocacy effort. So one of the things actually that I wanted to mention is YWCA actually has a transit program, and the design for that program is to actually reach folks who are trying to get to work or live outside of the Madison Metro area, district, I don't know what you want to call it, but we still see a huge discrepancy, lack of accessibility or ease of access for the families and individuals that we serve who are experiencing homelessness. I'm available for questions, but I feel like Jenny and Katie, both, talks about most of the issues that we're seeing as homeless service providers in general.
Anybody have any questions for anybody who's spoken?
Ken? Where is the vendor that you work with on the east side for getting the passes?
For getting the low-income passes?
Yeah. Is it over at the main Metro office?
There's actually 3 locations. Mm-hmm. One is at the Job Center on Aberg, and one is at – it's up here on the square?
At City Hall.
City Hall. I knew it was up here. And the third one? At the office, the main office, yeah.
Okay.
So they're all east side locations.
Other questions? I know you were talking with Chuck, and Chuck, you guys are going to follow up.
Mm-hmm. This is certainly a serious issue, so I don't. When I start on a lighter note, I am only doing that because I mentioned to Jenny when my wife and I, early in our marriage, we said, oh, she's in affordable housing, I'm in transit, oh, good, you do your thing, I do my thing, and we won't meet. And I just met Jenny last night at a movie that was done by a former East High School student, a very excellent documentary on the impact of homelessness on children. So it has been a learning process for Metro. I really appreciate that Mick has already done that outreach. So this is very nice to have this written list. I suggest, Jenny, do you want to written response? Do you want to sit down and meet? I think we're going to sit down and meet, because as I look at this, I would like to have some of our operations folks, just to give you a quick sample. Strollers are allowed on the bus, but we have a priority in the front for people with disabilities, which is identified here. So there's a number of operational, finance, customer service issues that a couple of us would be pleased to sit down and go through this in more detail.
Okay. Great. So we'll look to hear more from you in the future with regard to that. So we appreciate you coming. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
Okay, anybody else for public comment on something that's not on the agenda? Okay. Any disclosures or recusals? No? Okay. If there's... I have a note right here, which is what I'm planning to do. Thank you. If there's no objection, we have a scheduling conflict for Morgan, who's here from B-Cycle. So I would like to move H1 up on the agenda so that she can meet her other schedule. So, Morgan, if you would like to come up.
Good evening. Thanks for being a little flexible. I've got a flight to catch shortly, so glad to be here, though. Thank you for the time and opportunity to catch up on a little bit of B-Cycle. So I think I've spoken with you
Move
your mic
a little closer.
Sure. How's that sound?
Sure.
But just wanted to share a little bit about what happened with B-Cycle in 2018 and what we're looking forward to in 2019. So feel free to jump in with questions along the way. Really, to start out, we're part of Trek Bicycle. Many of you might know. And part of Trek's objective is to change the world by getting more people on bikes, and B-Cycle is really at the heart of that part of Trek's objective. Bike share is a great way to get people into cycling who haven't done it in a long time, who've never tried it, really low barrier to entry, really easy to get on. And so that's kind of our reason for being and why Trek continues to believe in bike share as an important part of its business that's very complementary to bike sales. As I said, we'll go over 2018 and then look at our strategy moving forward. So just a little bit of information from our annual user survey. People are happy with Madison B-Cycle. They see it as part of the transportation system and options here, making it easier to park, to get around, and like I said, an enhancement to other transportation options. We had over 20,000 users taking over 100,000 trips, 300,000 miles. So a lot of good things that we see here, getting people out of cars, getting them active. We see the bike as a simple solution to a lot of complex problems. For results in 2018, a couple other things I just wanted to highlight is that we had a new station that we put on the ground at the Goodman Community Center that was donated by Trek, and we worked closely with the Goodman Center to offer free passes to their constituents as well. So really excited about that one. A great location on the bike path, not only for that community, but for many people who use that path. So our vision for 2019 and beyond are a couple of things. So we really want to increase our ridership a lot this year, and we have a couple of ways that we're looking at that. One is bringing in electric bikes, which I'll talk a little bit about, and then expanding down the East Washington corridor. Obviously, there's a lot happening in that area that we want to be part of and help serve some of the transportation challenges, but that also helps us set up to expand even further beyond that area in the future, which I'll talk about a little bit more as well. We also have our eye on South Park Street and even beyond the borders of Madison. And finally, we see transportation integration as really key to making bike share grow even more exponentially, which we've seen in other communities. B-Cycle is not only here in Madison, but in about 40 to 50 other cities across the country. So we have a great network that we can learn from. As I said, we think about the bike as a really simple way to solve a lot of complex problems. Congestion, the isthmus is not going to get any bigger, as we know. We need all the tools in our toolbox to move people in and out. Pollution and health issues. Getting people active is really key to what we believe in with the bicycle. So right now, we are actually back in 2016, we were at about 40 B-cycle stations around the community. We expanded with the help from Yang and many of his colleagues in planning an expansion that helped us get mostly more dense in the downtown area, which is really important to successful bike share. You have to get dense in your solid core area, and then that allows you to expand out. People are usually only willing to walk about 5 minutes to the next bike share station, so that's really important. that was a really great success, and what we're looking for going forward is, as I said, to expand down East Washington. We see the opportunity for about 12 stations to start out with there. And then that sets us up to expand further into the kind of northeast part of the city. And I think there are some real transportation problems that we can help solve over there, but you've got to have that network to get people elsewhere in the city first. Beyond that, as I mentioned, Park Street we see as a really great opportunity to grow as well, going all the way out to the South Transfer Point. As I mentioned, from other cities, we see that density is really important. So this is just a little bit of where Madison is relative to some other cities in terms of the density of a system. So we're looking pretty good. We've increased and are up to 8.8 stations per square mile, and the ideal is 12 to 15. So we're on the right track. Talking about transit integration, this is something we're excited about. And B-Cycle piloted the first true transit integration program in the U.S. between bikes and buses in Los Angeles. So Metro in L.A. actually owns the bike share program. And that card that you see them using gets people right on the bus and also checks out a bike for them. So some technological things to work out with that, as I'm sure you can imagine, but something that we've done. And what you see when easy for people to use bike share is they use it more often. We've also seen some really neat things around other cities that I always like to share, just kind of in solving not only problems related to bike share specifically, but other things in the community and how do you get creative in the right of way. So one on the far left you see in Austin, Texas, where they've used a bike share station as a lane buffer. So they, instead of a parking space there, they actually put the station right in there and use that as a physical barrier to make people more comfortable using the bike lanes. We also see in Minneapolis that they're putting the bike share as an on-street corral, kind of like we're doing with some bike racks here in Madison, but trying it out with the bike share stations too. That really helps us when it gets difficult to find locations in the right place, which is key to people using them, finding some additional space to use. And then finally, I really love this one in Philadelphia. They took a through street that really was not very highly used, not super useful, and made it for pedestrians. So blocked it off. Bike share was part of that, but there were also cafe seating and many other things to make it a really beautiful, attractive, and useful space for pedestrians. So one of the big things going on in 2019 is the launch of our electric bike. So this is a brand new best-in-class bike that has just started to launch across the country in small quantities. And Madison will be the first city to convert its existing bike share system to a fully electric system. So this is a really big deal, and we're very excited to be doing it in our own hometown. We're still finalizing the date, but we're hoping it'll be in mid-June. So stay tuned. We should have that very soon. Like I said, full-scale replacement of the bikes. Now, one thing that's good to know with this bike is you have to turn the power on. So if someone does not want that extra boost, they can just leave it off, and it's still a really nice ride. The bike is about the same weight as our existing bikes, and we've learned a lot in the last 10 years that we've been in bike share about how to make the bikes really durable but also lighter and easier to ride, and this bike is a really good culmination of all those things. So that is what I have prepared for you, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you have and talk more about any of those items I introduced.
Questions?
Bridget?
Maybe more of a comment than a question. So with electric bicycles,
So with electric bicycles, technically in Wisconsin they're still considered motor vehicles, and so to convert them before the pending legislation would pass could potentially cause some issues with the city of Madison. So I'm not sure what that, if there's a plan for that.
Sure.
I mean, the legislation is, you know, it's been introduced again, and I think it's likely to pass. It's passed out of the subcommittees already in both houses, but
we're tracking it really closely, and it is just for the path, so that would affect it, and so we're very aware of.
Well, it's also bike lanes.
Our understanding is that it's for paths and that we would be really careful about user communication, making sure that they understand the rules, and that being able to turn the power on and off is really key, too, of, you know, making sure that people are following that. Yeah.
So you're working closely with traffic engineering on that?
Yeah.
Right. You know, we also expect the
legislation is going to pass. So it's just, you know, timing issues. But I do like, you know, Bicycle's plan that to be able to turn that function off, on and off, so that to comply with the existing legislation, you know, before the new legislation is passed. I think, you know, these bicycles can still operate on the pass with the, you know, with the power switched off. So.
Yeah. And we we did a field trial with the bikes, and we saw that people only use the power about 50% of the time, which was surprising to me a little bit. But, yeah, good to know that people are not always using it.
Yeah. I also want to mention that these bicycles actually has a lower speed, top speed than the, you know, some of other e-bikes. You know, other e-bikes, they may go up to 27 miles per hour. This one is much at a lower speed.
Yeah, Morgan can speak more on that. 17, where the power taps are.
Right.
Other questions from people, Grant?
A little bit of a parochial question, but you got a spot in District 15 last year at the Beer Garden, and there was some future expansion. Was Pinney Library one of those locations, and have you already connected with, because they're sort of set to open like early next year. Is that on your radar? And
yeah, we've had some initial conversations, and definitely that's one we've got our eye on. That would be a nice extension into that direction. And yeah.
Perfect. And then two just, I guess, comments maybe also for staff. One, I really like this idea of reclaiming some of the existing right-of-way, you know, replacing an on-street car parking stall with either bike parking or B station. So I think that's something we should really be looking at. And then the other is also this transportation card. So as we're thinking about, you know, BRT, obviously, but just broadly, there's been discussion of a card that would work for bike share, for transit, I think also for parking would be the ideal, right, to have that sort of one card that you could put money on and use, and really I think it supports multimodal travel really well. So just hope that's on somebody's radar, and it's something that we're really looking at implementing sooner than later.
It's part of our smart city plan.
It's a really
good point. I figured you were all over it, but
really good point. And the other one is apps and making sure that there's access across that, and that doesn't serve everyone, where the card is really great to have for that purpose, but another important one.
So there have been discussions with Metro about a card that might work for both?
You've talked about this as a long term, like, wouldn't it be great? So I think, you know, we're getting to the point where it'd be great to take that to the next step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So most of you know, but you may not know, that the Department of Transportation now includes traffic engineering, parking, and Metro, and our boss, Tom Lynch, really views the one transportation card as part of the smart city and whatever you call it, something that we need to do.
Yeah. So I should know the answer to this, but I'll ask it anyway. Are your B-cycles compatible with the Madison Metro bike racks? Can they be attached?
They can fit on there. This has been tried and tested, but we hope that people are using it as a first mile, last mile part of their transit puzzle. So taking a B-cycle part of the way, getting on the bus without the B-cycle, because they do get charged while they have the bike. So it's possible, but we hope that we have stations in the right places where people don't have to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Do you know of any cities that have a mixed system, so you have a fixed place to return your bikes, mm-hmm. and I think Washington, D.C. is that model too, right?
Yeah.
And I just came back from Seattle, which, of course, is the opposite, and you have bikes in the middle of the lake and every place. But it does seem like Seattle has a situation where people, like, use them as the last mile a lot more, and then they just put them out on the sidewalk out in front of homes that are far away from those stations. Mm-hmm. Is there ever a future where a city would have both? And what would be, or do you just really have to choose one or the other?
It's a really great question that we've been thinking about a lot in the last year and a half. Our industry has changed a ton, and it's forced us to look at what we do, what we know, what works, and how we evolve it. So I think we saw that kind of dockless bike share in its original form was not successful in the U.S. It was we've seen all of those operators either pull out operations, go out of business, or change their focus away from bicycles. But I think there's some benefit that you've hit on, that you know that ease and proximity of use is something that people were interested in. So from our perspective, we still think that a docked system provides that order and reliability that's key to a system being successful. But we're looking at how do we make that more flexible? How do we take out cost so you can have more of those? So you think of them more as like putting in a bike rack, not a huge investment every time you want to put in a station. So that's where our the other reason for that is B-Cycle actually does have a bike that we don't consider dockless, but it has a lock-to technology. So it has kind of a U-lock that a city can decide how they want it to be used. So we have a station with docks that don't have any technology in them. It's just basically something to lock it to. Other cities just use it with their pedestrian or their regular bike racks. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen from those cities is even though those bikes could be locked anywhere, they're using them only in those designated stations using geofences. So it's been really interesting when they've got that ability, they've chosen not to do that. So that's something that has been informing our thinking as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other comments or questions for Morgan? Okay. Great. Thanks. Great. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Definitely follow up and let me know if you think of anything else. But thank
you. And if you could send the presentation. Yeah. So it'll be in Legistar, and if you're interested, you know, Patrick can certainly send it around to everybody so that you have the presentation.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Okay. Next we have Lieutenant Dave, the police first quarter traffic report.
Good evening. I presume everyone has a copy of the data that I forwarded. Does anybody? No, I have an extra if you need one.
I can see it when I.
Ken, I've got a few extra. Does anyone else need one?
I do.
That was a late distribution.
You bet.
Sorry, this wasn't online a couple days ago then, right? Or did I just miss it?
Yeah, that's that. I sent a message out on Monday?
Yeah. Okay, I probably missed it then. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Everybody have one?
I've been doing this.
Okay.
So in response to some of the feedback I had received at our last meeting, this data was reformatted for the following quarter, and the information was broken down more consistent with the requests that had been made of me at that last meeting. So if you take a look at the first document, it highlights MPD's department-wide violations that are broken down into two subgroups, hazardous and non-hazardous violations. And that data is so reflected on that particular document. And if you move to the second, and I'll just provide a quick overview, we can do a deeper dive as is required. The second document highlights our department-wide warnings, again, broken down into two subgroups, hazardous and non-hazardous categories. In addition, what we did was broke out the work that our test unit does, and that data is reflected in this particular document, that third document. We did combine both violations and warnings under the subgroups of hazardous and non-hazardous violations. The next document references warning totals by districts, so that just kind of gives you some context as to how enforcement is occurring across the districts of the city, the police districts of the city. And again, this particular document only really references warnings. One of the things that I would likely add for our next meeting is this sort of breakdown for both hazardous and non-hazardous violations as well. That was a shortcoming. One of the questions raised in our last meeting really asked more poignantly as to how we were deploying resources and how our complaints were coming in. So this next document really highlights the number of citizen complaints that come into our department. Keep in mind that Our officers have a fair amount of experience, too, with the problem areas in their districts, and will often apply their time to those areas to hope, you know, with the hopes of remediating the traffic issue that's present. And moving on to the next document is the crossing guard violation totals. These are often violations that the crossing guards will report and then that we'll actually act on when legally we're able to do so and issue a citation to the offending vehicle. So that documents the work that we do in that area as well. And then lastly, we spoke a little bit, or the ask at the last meeting was for a breakdown of our grant efforts. So we'll start reporting on that as well. And that is the last document where we highlight the citations and warnings issued as a result of the grant-funded deployments. So that's a brief overview of those respective documents. Any questions about that data?
Go ahead. Well, mine's not exactly, it's more of a sort of discussion item than a question, I guess. So. I don't know if others have maybe questions.
Well, it's a question. Perhaps I wasn't here the last time you were here, Lieutenant, so you may have covered this, but you have a lot of data here. I mean, how do you use it? Do you get together with the different district heads and kind of figure out, do we see a spike in this particular problem? We'll do something about it? Or, I mean, collecting data is fine, but what would you do with it?
Yeah. Well, again, this data reflects the enforcement efforts that the department undertook.
Okay.
We get our complaints often from citizens and officer experience. And part of what we're starting to work toward, and we had with Yang sort of a pre-meeting to start discussing how we can use data to influence the application of departmental resources. And that would also include potential for engineering solutions as well. So we had our first meeting. We're going to have to follow up and do a deeper dive as to how we can use data more effectively in our decision-making.
Good. Thank you.
Well, I guess my question or comment is along the same sorts of lines, and thank you for doing this and for feedback. I was on, ped bike motor vehicle for a couple of years, and so this probably maybe the 20th or so of these reports that I've gotten, and we in that body had similar conversations about what are we supposed to do with this data. I think what I've gathered is that in a large part it's really kind of an activity report, which I think is important and useful for, you know, questions of staffing and just making sure that work is getting done. I think for this body, part of that conversation that I heard from the last meeting was what do we do with it and how can we connect the dots between the safety report or the crash report that comes out. And so I'm really encouraged to hear that you're starting to have conversations with traffic engineering. I wonder, maybe this is something that we need to talk more about at some point as a body, but I just sort of hate to have anybody working and pulling all these numbers together if it's not really, you know, doing much for us either. I wonder if potentially those quarterly updates would be more perhaps an update on, you know, what conversations you are all having and how kind of what ideas there are to use traffic enforcement towards some of these bigger kind of safety issues and maybe less data report or activity report. So I'm just kind of putting that out there as an idea, and I don't know exactly where to go with that conversation, but I just want to call it out I just don't want anybody to be wasting their time, and I think this question of what's the best way to leverage what I think are some pretty scarce resources on the traffic enforcement team and really making sure that there's good direction of, you know, what are the goals there? Is it just kind of whack-a-mole on some of the hot spots, or are there other kind of more targeted initiatives that you know, this body should be helping to steer?
Okay. So just, I think I was here, but neither Grant or Gary were here when you were here the last time. And I think this is responsive to the different questions that we had at that time. Our question, and not to say that we shouldn't also have the analysis of now what do we do. A thing that struck me initially I looked at the speeding, and I went from first quarter to second quarter, and on violations, it's like almost in half. You know, it would go so like from 1,400 to 800 something. And I thought, okay, maybe this is just less people out on patrol because, you know, and then I looked over at warnings and they're almost identical. So just as far as looking at that, saying, that's curious, you know, that you get, it was, looks like a 45% reduction in speeding violations from 1 year to the next. But the warnings stay the same. And whether you had, just brainstorming on your own at this time, any idea of did your officers sort of say, seems like we're not issuing as many speeding? Because that's your main volume driver, right, is your speeding tickets. I mean, when you look at out of 2,600 total in 2017 or 2,700, half of those were speeding. I mean, so...
So, Ken, without doing a deeper dive, what I can tell you is that there are a number of factors that can influence our ability to perform traffic safety efforts, right? So if you take a look and compare one quarter to another, what was the weather like? If you have, for instance, if you're measuring the quarter that turns out to be January, February, March, and weather is really bad 1 year as opposed to the other, that's going to significantly impact our ability to do traffic enforcement, particularly speed, okay? Other factors that can come to play are calls for service. So when we look at patrol's response and contribution to traffic and traffic enforcement and safety, calls for service can drive their ability or drive them away from doing traffic safety because of the other priorities that their respective districts are facing. So there are a number of issues that can impact our ability to actually do this type of work consistently. So it's not unusual to see ebbs and flows. What particularly caused that drop is not something I could say without doing a deeper dive. I should point out two staffing issues. What's going on organizationally that's driving staffing issues? So there are, again, a number of factors that can influence these numbers. And to actually answer that question within a specific time frame, I would have to do a deeper analysis.
Sure, I understand.
I think that really kind of illustrates my point. So that question and answer has happened most quarters that this is here. And I think at the end of the day, I've never seen anyone pull here's some information based on these numbers that's going to lead us somewhere, you know, on a policy path. And so, you know, I'm thinking of this body as one that's in charge of implementing adopted plans and policy, transportation related. And I will just reinforce my previous comment that I think it's probably a good activity report for the department, right, in terms of your operations and knowing, or, you know, maybe it is or maybe it isn't, but I still think that our focus should maybe start to shift towards just, again, thinking about other ways or what are the best ways to deploy those limited resources, you know, across the city. Should it be connected with detour projects that are happening? You know, I noticed an officer at the diverter at Jennifer Street where, because of the construction on Williamson Wilson, you got a lot more people trying to ignore that do not enter sign and come out. So it was, you know, after several weeks, someone was deployed there. Same issues happen when there's other projects around school zones. So in my mind, you know, using our enforcement activities across the whole city to try and manage speeding is a tough proposition, which I'm sure you guys have encountered. I mean, you can never really be in enough places. Maybe we really have to think a little bit, you know, really, really more targeted kind of initiatives on different items like, you know, crosswalk enforcement or red light running or, you know, other things in addition to kind of the speed patrol. So that's, I guess, hopefully what maybe the conversations that are going to happen with traffic engineering and hopefully this body could help steer, you know, some of those choices around where we could recommend activity.
Mm-hmm. Other comments? Mike?
No, I have a question. I think it was a couple of months ago I went on a ride along with one of the officers from the East District, and it was It wasn't like a busy night. It was actually very early on a Sunday morning. And one of the things I noted was when we were driving through a neighborhood just north of Milwaukee Street, he came upon another officer who was standing outside the vehicle, his squad car, waiting for backup because there was a SUV that had been reported stolen. It was in the middle of a side street facing the wrong way, and you couldn't tell if somebody was in the vehicle or not, so I guess the first officer had called for another officer to come, and the officer I was with noticed this and stopped, and they, you know, approached the vehicle with their sidearms drawn to make sure it was empty and everything, and then the third officer came, but I noticed they went through the vehicle, and the officer I was with came back, and he said, yeah, the vehicle had the keys in the ignition. And what really dawned upon me and what I've thought about since then was the officer I was with asked me how many officers I thought were on patrol in the entire city at that time. And I naively thought it would be like 50, 75, something like that. And I was told it was, I think, if memory serves, it was 28. Mm. So then I got to thinking about it, and so there was a period of time where three officers of the 28 were occupied for a significant period of time on a vehicle that was probably stolen because somebody left their keys in the car. And it just dawned upon me, like with the contacts I have from constituents about speeding in neighborhoods and that, how, you know, are we having any impact on the habits of vehicle owners to get them not to leave their keys in the car and leave them unlocked? Because it's very frustrating for me when we're, you know, a couple of times we've talked about the resources that the police department has and the number of officers you can have patrolling on the streets at one time. And, you know, gosh, when you have situations that needlessly really occupy the time of that many officers, then I look and it's no wonder why, you know, there are going to be traffic enforcement issues in neighborhoods because officers simply can't patrol. You know, they're spending time on situations where if people use common sense and then keep their keys in the car, you know, they'd be able to patrol and hopefully prevent other incidents from occurring. So, you know, are we having any impact, like with all the vehicle thefts, where, you know, trying to talk about, you know, yeah, it was a car that had the keys left in it. Are we having any impact in changing the habits of motorists?
I don't have an answer for that question. I know that continues to be an issue for us. And that and many other sorts of similar sorts of behavior can drive our calls for service. There's no question about it. And as you correctly observed, when we have three officers out dealing with that particular incident and we only have 28 working, it doesn't take long before you can exacerbate the resources for that shift. And then the other factor is, that was a fairly sort of routine call, but what happens when you have a real complicated call that actually requires half of your shift to respond to it? And that can create frustration because then a citizen may call in a lower-level complaint, but then that complaint gets parked in queue because we simply don't have the resources to respond. So all of these factors are occurring. And we do our best to manage those impacts, and yet try to produce some measurable results as they relate to traffic safety.
Now everybody else has had their questions. I do have one for you. I think it is really important to make sure that we're asking you for information that's going to be helpful and that we're actually going to use. And you were very responsive to providing us with information that we asked for last time around. And I think what I have heard from other people and what we've talked about in our work plan is trying to get thoughts from the various departments, divisions, in terms of transportation safety issues. and how can we improve transportation safety? So we have a lot of data here, and as I look at, I was a banker, so I look at data a lot. You know, I looked at the total violations and annualized to 2019, and it looks like those are down, but it looks like the warnings are up, you know, when you annualize them. So what does that mean? Well, from what you're saying, it, you know, it may mean that the officers were involved in calls, as Mike was talking about, and didn't have as many opportunities to do this type of enforcement. And I think I'm hearing a sense from people that that's what we're interested in, is your executive summary of comments as to, you know, how are things going and what would be helpful for us to hear. So, you know, maybe we should take some time and have a conversation so that we're not asking you to spend your time preparing reports. If you're not using this report, all of these reports, for anything else, and people here don't find all of these numbers useful, maybe some of the totals are useful, or maybe the, you know, maybe the speeding violations are useful because that's the biggest thing. You know, maybe we could find a way to make it more efficient for you to provide us with the information, and we can hear, you know, how are you all working together to try and improve transportation safety, and what can we do? You know, I mean, in the wintertime, I know people start their cars and leave their keys in the car, you know, because they're warming the car up or whatever. And so we hear about those types of things maybe in the wintertime, but maybe not in the summertime. You know, maybe there are some types of educational things that we as the Transportation Commission can get involved in to try and help where you see issues that where the public needs to be more informed in order to try and improve safety. So I don't know if you want to give that some thought as to, you know, what data is easy for you to collect, and do you collect and use in other places so it's not a an extra chore for you to use your limited resources to prepare? Or is it better to have, you know, more of a conversation about an executive summary type thing about what you're seeing and what you've been able to do and where you need more resources, or what do you think that we could help do to improve transportation safety? So I don't know what other people think about that, but I hate to have you preparing information that, you know, we're going to look at and go, wow, that's nice, but what does that mean? When the conversation we've had with you tonight, that's what I got out of this, was the conversation we had with you, as opposed to, you know, some of the numbers certainly I got something from. But I don't know, what are other people's thoughts about that? Maybe trying to reimagine how we handle this. So what are your thoughts about that?
For me, it's tough to find a lot of use in numbers when you don't necessarily have the background to what may have contributed to them or what might be behind them. For me, just looking, you know, the bike ped warnings and violations, for example, you know, when I first moved here, I guess 20 years ago, I know that there was, because I thought every day, a really concentrated effort to place officers at unsignalized crossings where motor vehicle traffic might not be stopping people in the crosswalk, for example, who are actively crossing. And just thinking back now, it seems like a lot of those locations have been changed to signalized crossings. And so one of the things that occurs to me is, have we found that it's more effective to regulate behavior through engineering rather than trying to educate people on things? And I guess I wonder if that gets reflected in enforcement, or if it was rather, well, there was a choice made by law enforcement to no longer maybe have that type of position for bike ped enforcement, and to pull resources away from that. So I'm just not sure kind of what the impact is and what the trends are and why some of the choices may have been made, and whether there was even coordination between engineering and law enforcement over the years. So for me, it's hard to be very helpful
in trying to do a job, you know, on the commission without sort of diving into some of that more. So I'm not sure if...
You know, I think possibly it's our group's responsibility to look at the list down here and say, what are the things that are sort of within our resources as far as when we're looking at traffic engineering and things like that. So, for example, unsafe backing. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a thing that traffic engineering necessarily can do to, other than putting up a big sign, you coming out in the middle of the night saying, don't back up. You know, I mean, there's no engineering solution to that, or vehicle registration. That's not in our ballpark or anything like that. Whereas the speeding stuff, mm-hmm. You know, we should probably look at no more than three or four lines of this mm-hmm. that says, okay, these are possibly things that law enforcement would say, you know, we regularly in this three-block stretch get this problem. And possibly it is a thing where traffic engineering or different signaling, and possibly it's a situation where when, you know, Bridget says, you know, we now have signals there. Well, that's partly because they went out there because officers are saying, we're getting a whole lot of problems crossing, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think instead of asking the police to sort of analyze this whole thing, we really need to look at our three or four lines and say, okay, what are the ones that we can do something about? Because I can't figure, you know, there's all of these things that I can't do anything about. And it's important to the police to have vehicles registered, but it's certainly not within anything that we're ever going to take a vote on. That they need to spend their time on that, but we can't do anything to help them.
I personally think that's a great idea. So why don't we do that? We'll look at it and perhaps bring it back to the – maybe staff can look at it and bring it back to us to say, you know, this is what we think, and the commission can respond, so perhaps make it easier for you to prepare the information. But personally, I think it's great for you to come so we can have the conversation and we can hear about how your work is going with traffic engineering to improve traffic safety, because that's what we're here for.
Can I? Oh, good.
So I just want to I think that's all right. And I want to reinforce the, I think, opportunity for the two-way communication. So I think one of, you know, besides numbers of citations, I think, you know, you all are the kind of front line of getting a lot of the resident complaints, right? I mean, there's a hotline where a lot of the feeding issues, for example. So I think you have a really, even separate from what shows up in the citation data, which might be skewed more by, you know, staffing issues or other things, you probably also have data on kind of where the hot spots are in terms of where these complaints are coming in. So that's, you know, I think is good information to bring back to this group so that we've clearly identified kind of where some of the biggest problems are. I think the other good source of data is from that crash or safety analysis that's done on an annual basis. And there might be things that aren't showing up in citation reports that are showing up there as major crash issues. And I think then what we can provide back is some guidance around maybe some priority areas of, you know, yeah, with those limited resources, these seem to be some of the key areas that we should be looking at. And then also, I think one of the jobs of this body is to communicate and give recommendations back to the council. And so, I think a lot of us have identified maybe there are engineering fix that would be better long-term, right? Instead of relying on enforcement for an area that's just built wrong and is always going to have speeding, maybe that would be information that we could kind of collect, present to the council, and when we're looking at budgeting, saying, what is the value of adding, you know, $200,000 to traffic calming budget, right? If we think we could reduce speeding in five spots by adding X amount of money to do some engineering fixes, you know, maybe because we heard about the issues through the police department, right? They're getting the calls, hey, there's speeding happening. We get that data. We need to be able to get that in front of the council to make those decisions if that's, you know, if that's something that we could do.
One more question. What does arterial mean?
That's a
traffic signal violation. What do you?
So you go down and it, right after stop and go, it says arterial. What is it that the person's doing wrong?
Yeah, I have to look if this includes stop signs and. Now my guess is it's a traffic standard violation, but let me verify that.
Yeah, I don't, all the rest sure I could have done on
stop
Jeopardy.
And go,
yeah.
Which might be referencing stop sign violations, but let me verify that that's referring to traffic standard violations. In other words, red signal or yellow signal violations.
And then, Grant, relative to the traffic, the crash report, one of the things that we asked was that analysis be done of the numbers, and that is something that is being done, something that hasn't been done before, that's coming back to us with recommendations as a result of that. So we're going to do that in a two-step process going forward. We're going to see both the data, and then we're going to receive an analysis of the data that can do some of the things that you're talking about.
And I think let's make sure we bring in our colleagues here to get that data.
You guys are working together on that, right?
See.
Right, yeah. Actually, and not just analysis of the data, but also look at individual location to see what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Not just from an engineering perspective, but also from education enforcement perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And also we'll probably go the other way around as well, as kind of Ken mentioned that from the enforcement data, we can learn something as well. Maybe there are engineering fixes, kind of, Grant has been talking about that we may develop engineering measures to reduce enforcement needs. So I think there's a lot of areas that, we can collaborate, and we already started doing that. We'll report back to the commission on that as we make more progress.
Great. So this is very helpful discussion. Other comments for the lieutenant? Hopefully this was helpful for you, and hopefully we can make it more helpful and a better use of your resources in the future as well. So we'd appreciate feedback from you, and maybe you and Yang can get together and talk about some of these things and which particular items might be of most benefit, and then we can take a look at that and hopefully make it a more efficient process in the future.
In the end, I want to offer information that helps this commission in its decision-making, so I appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, and we want to do things that can help the police as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have mentioned that both Lieutenant Dave and others at MPD has been very helpful to the traffic engineering team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we receive, as you guys know, tons of requests and complaints from the public, and we're trying to deal with them. Lots of times we have engineering measures. A lot of times we need something beyond that. Or a lot of times, as some of the members mentioned, that we may not have engineering to fix that, but some enforcement really help. We've been, forwarding those requests to the attendant, Dave, and the team at MPD. They've been very helpful in that process.
Thank you very much. Anybody have anything else?
Do we need a motion to receive the report?
We do.
I'll move that.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Have a good evening.
Next, you might have noticed that you didn't receive a parking report yet. There were some switches with some of the meters, and there were some software issues and some other things that caused Sabrina to need to confirm some of the data before she released the report. She wanted to make sure that it was verified. So she's expecting to have that hopefully by tomorrow or the end of the week. So I would ask for a motion to refer this to the next meeting.
So moved. Second.
There's a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Next, Chuck. Excuse me.
So in your packet is our detailed quarterly report. I'm going to pull out some highlights and then try to answer any of your questions. Starting with ridership, for the first quarter, we did see a decline of 6.9% in ridership. We looked at some of the factors and saw some of the cold days where there were school closures impacted both the Route 80 on campus and also our what we call our Dodger buses to MMSD. They saw larger than average decreases in ridership because of those school closures. Then we wanted to look at some other routes that were less impacted. The Route 75 to Epic saw an increase. Another route we track closely is the Route 10. I call it a little bit of a mini BRT route that was helped to be designed by one of the commissioners here. And that is it provides frequent service between the isthmus, bypasses the square, goes to campus, and then to some of the health clinics out by Midvale, Mineral Point Road, and Sego. And so that saw less than an average drop in ridership. Paratransit saw a 56% drop in ridership because of family care, so we wanted to drill down on that just a little bit, which you see here, the 56% drop, especially for newer members. We now have no formal MA waiver clients. We used to have an arrangement with the county where those MA waiver clients, we had records for them, their ridership. We received funding through the county that was originally sourced from the federal government, MA waiver funding. Last year in the first quarter, we got our last installment of that funding. At the very bottom, you see the MA waiver funding of $682,000. We used to get $4 million a year, so about $1 million a quarter. So last year, the first quarter saw that drop, and then this year, of course, we're at zero. In the future, there will be no MA waiver funds. Those all go to family care agencies. Many of you were involved in that decision-making process. Although our paratransit agency ticket revenues are down 25%, if you look near the bottom, that is more than we had anticipated. That's a smaller drop than the ridership drop, so we're still seeing individuals that are using our agency fare tickets. That revenue is actually a reason why our budget is in pretty good shape for the first quarter, which I'll get to in a moment. But I wanted to give you that snapshot of what's happening on the paratransit side. On the safety side, I'll just highlight a couple quick things. We measure all accidents, but these numbers here are reflecting chargeable and preventable accidents. A chargeable accident is where our driver is primarily responsible for an accident. A preventable accident is where the driver is partly responsible. So both of those we consider responsible accidents. That was actually up from 19-1 in the first quarter. However, when we work with our transit insurance company, they are reporting that their payout claims in the first quarter and the reserve levels for any of our accidents are actually down by 50%. So that's an encouraging note. Again, for newer members, you may not know, a year or two ago, I reported on how we have had a long-term drop in payout claims that is resulting in a return of insurance excess surplus of $800,000 over the next 5 years. We are in the second year of that. We are getting $200,000 back this year. That goes to the general fund. I wish that went to Metro, but goes to the general fund. And we just found out a week or two ago that our 2018 performance, we were the best improvement of safety of all the large systems in Wisconsin. That includes Appleton, Green Bay, Racine, Kenosha, and Madison. So we're having a safety banquet next week. We will be recognizing over 200 drivers on that, and they're the ones that are at the forefront of that. Yes.
Could you just clarify on the surplus going back to the general fund? So is insurance also paid for out of the general fund, or what's the rationale?
Well, no, our insurance payments every year come from Metro's budget. But anytime we are able to gain a reserve or contingency fund level, it's really city funds. Metro has the ability to influence the council in trying to use that, as we have for some design work at Oscar Mayer, some design work at Nakusa when we were looking at that. But ultimately, it is the city's general fund, and any use of that requires us to get a budget amendment through the Finance Committee and the Common Council. So when we have that money coming back to us, it is a check that I hold in my hand briefly, smile, share the good news with folks, but then it goes to the city, just so we're very clear on that. Yes.
Chuck, can you give me an example of what these acts, when I see 20 accidents and $7,400, you know,
if we have,
that's like $400 per claim. What's going on?
I mean, if we make a turn and our mirror touches a telephone pole, a bus stop sign, or whatever, and does no damage to the mirror, it is still a chargeable accident, which is our most serious charge. Obviously, we pay attention to the dollars, too.
Yeah.
But if we touch anything, and really, it's a stationary object, that is our
fault. Yeah, that's your fault. But
we own that. And there may not be any damage.
Okay.
But if we cause damage or injury, well, then we have an insurance company that pays out claims, or they set aside a reserve level, because after 30 years, they have a sense of how much you need to set aside. And so that's why those dollars. Now, those are very low dollars. The 2018 was part of a record year for us. In fact, we get the best improvement in safety in the system. So those are very unusually low numbers, but I'm really glad they are low.
Yeah, putting a new bumper cover on a Prius.
Exactly. You can have one accident where those numbers are dwarfed by one accident.
So okay. Okay.
I just want to highlight our efficiency measures just because we only do this quarterly. And last year we had a peer analysis, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, requires every 5 years that every public transportation system in the state is reviewed next to its peers across the United States. So we are compared to a lot of cities like Lansing, Michigan, Albany, New York, and other cities that typically, but not exclusively, are northern climates, are generally big college towns, perhaps with a state capital, and they look at those peers. And when they did this analysis last year, the most recent data that they had was 2015. So we used to report on 2012 or 2010 data. Now we have 2015 data. So first, on expense per revenue hour, we had in the first quarter an average of $119.34. Our peers in 2015 were at $113. If you take 1% or 2% inflation, that's actually higher than where we are today. So I think we compare very favorably on that. If we look at revenue to expense, or in my business, we call it fare box recovery. That is, how much of your operating expenses do you get covered through the fare box? We averaged almost 27%. 4 years ago, our peers were at 19%. So this is actually a mixed message. On the one hand, I'm really glad that we've taken more fare box revenue. We have strong ridership, which I'm going to show you here in a moment. But our fares are higher because all of our peers are regional transit authorities. Mm-hmm. So when we were looking at a regional transit authority 10 years ago, one of the first things the RTA board was looking at was reducing fares because we had just raised them in 2009. It was actually on the table to bring the fares back down comparable to our peers. So that's a mixed message. I share that number with you. Our cost per passenger, even though there's been a couple years of inflation, is lower than our peers, and that's because we do very well on rides per hour. So we do 33 rides per hour versus our peers at 29 rides per hour. That is, every hour that a bus is out on the street, we're picking up 33 rides an hour. Now, the Route 80 might do 110 rides in 1 hour, but the a route on the periphery on a Saturday might only do 8 rides an hour. The average is 33, and our peers are 29.2. And then we do very well if you look at our ridership given our population, ridership per capita. These are standard WSDOT criteria. They pick these criteria to determine if we meet certain standards. So in that one, we're actually about twice our peers, but then we also have more service than our peers. We have 1.39 revenue hours of service per capita versus our peers at 0.76. Then financially, for the first quarter, I just want to highlight very quickly the revenues and expenses. I'm showing you the cash and tickets being above budget. That drove our overall revenue to be healthier than the budget for the first quarter because of family care ticket revenues, which show up under our cash, ticket, and pass revenues. And then on the expense side, we're actually over budget there too by about the same amount. That was driven by personnel costs. We are still experiencing the ripple effects of phasing out directly operated paratransit services. Last year, that was in the budget for January 1, but you will recall that the family care was actually transitioned over a period of time. We had an arbitration over the issue of directly operated paratransit being phased out. We won that arbitration, and then we didn't phase it out until August 10th. So as a result, we held positions open because we anticipated moving paratransit driver positions until vacant positions. And now we're just catching up in the training of part-time and the promotion of part-time to full-time drivers. So that's why that's primarily over budget. So overall, and this is again related to the question from the alder, is a reserve level that's really the city's reserve, but it is something that has been attributed to our budget, where we started the year at $4.7 million, and after the first quarter, I think that's about where we're at. Projects, very quickly, you approve the Sun Prairie service change, but we spent a lot of time in the first quarter finalizing things, working on the legal agreement with John Strange. That's now underway for August of 2019. The council approved the first phase of the upgraded construction of 1101 East Washington to focus on the e-bus adjustments that we need to make to get e-buses in 1101 to move the service lane so it's in a more efficient position for maneuvering buses and to upgrade fire safety programs. So that bid has been awarded. Sullivan is on site. If you go by 1101 East Washington today, you'll see a giant sign that announces the first phase of construction. So we're very happy to see that. The new flyer bus manufacturing company is literally putting on the line in the next week or two our first bus of 15 bus purchased. The first ones will actually be delivered here in June, but we did a lot of work with the pre-production, literally reviewing everything from driver seats to steering to all the various detailed aspects that go into that. So we're excited that those buses are coming in. That's related to the Sun Prairie service, because without that, we wouldn't be able to provide a few extra buses for Sun Prairie.
Will the average person be able to tell the difference?
In this case, they will, because they will have the new approved transportation parking committee.
Yeah, yeah, but
a logo. But
if it was a Black Ops thing, would we be able to see a difference?
You know, it is really hard for me to answer that. As much as I ride a bus, and this is true for Drew and Tim and others, we notice minute changes. So it will be different, but you can tell me the answer to that question in another two or three
minutes. Chromium.
Whether you notice under the truck. You can answer that question. I think you will notice it.
Grant has a question for you.
Certainly for a new bus, there's a new bus smell for a number of months. So. Yes.
That kind of more in-depth review to land on all the details, that's not something you do every year, correct, or is it?
We do it every year because we will get feedback from drivers, for example, on the ergonomics of the seat or the steering. We have new power steering just in the last year or two that was partly feedback from drivers and partly finding a vendor that would be able to address that need. And there's all kinds of other things about how the bus stops, how the bus maneuvers. And so Jeff Butler, our maintenance supervisor, spends as much time on the maintenance side, the engine and transmission and those very technical things, as well as the passenger comfort and the driver ergonomic issues. So every year we're looking to see if we need to tweak that order so that it gets a little bit better for the next year.
Great. Thanks.
And then, of course, with the Middleton closing, again, for new members, that is out on Century Avenue. We've been out there 5 years as an overflow facility, and the owner has said we need to be out of there. We've known that for months, and so we're going to fit those buses all in 1101. But we had gotten rid of 17 paratransit vehicles. We had a little breathing room, and now we're going to fill it up. It's not designed for this many buses, but for a temporary stopgap measure for us to serve Sun Prairie. We are doing it, and then a reminder that MMSD is phasing out middle school service over the next 3 years. So eventually we will bring that number down to like 210 to 215. And I will deal with the tension of people saying, oh, you got some extra buses now. Let's use them right away for Epic or other services. And I don't want to stay at 218 buses. I want to bring it down to somewhere between 210 215, but it's a discussion I'll have with Tom Lynch and the mayor and others about how we get to a number that I feel is appropriate and that everybody agrees with. So we may get a short-term extension at Middleton because with the construction going on, we have a lot going on at 1101, and they have expressed a willingness to give us a couple-month extension while we're doing the construction work at 1101.
Have you looked for a replacement out there?
Well, as you may know, we're in negotiations about Oscar Mayer, and one of
right.
our first things
I meant,
would...
I meant on that side of town.
No.
Okay.
Because if we get Oscar Mayer, our first thing would be use one of the existing buildings, just as kind of a Middleton.
Okay.
And we would rotate buses in for fueling, and eventually we would build up Oscar Mayer with a maintenance service line and things like that. But our first thing would just be able to park buses out there.
Okay.
So that's an overview. Be happy to... try to answer any other questions.
I was just going to ask if there's any updates on that work.
Just that I know the negotiations are underway, and we have a regular meeting with the real estate folks, with the planners, with Tom Lynch, talking about the status, going over some of our plans for Oscar Mayer. But other than that, stay tuned. We'll have to have a more detailed update soon.
Chuck, for your presentations in the future, when so go way back to the beginning when you were telling us that ridership was down 6%.
Yes.
When you do see a thing where like 80 and MMSD are big numbers,
yes.
Why don't you also then give us a total minus the two big number things? Because I think that relieves me a little bit. You know, when I see...
In other words, show what the number would be without those giant drops.
Yeah, so if you otherwise were comparing total minus 80 in MMSD, it's not going to be a 7% drop. It's going to be like a 2% drop, right? So in the future, other things like that, where there's a big influential number, pull that out, and then we can see, okay, other riderships still also went down by whatever, but... Otherwise, I can't do that math.
No.
When I'm looking at
Drew's staff can. We do it already in your report. You'll see the change in ridership without the impact of UW. So if you go to your packet, which I will do now very quickly, you'll see it without UW. But you're asking if there's any others where there's something going on unique.
I mean,
then what's the impact without those?
Yeah.
Yep, we'll do that.
What is the reason for the – I mean, I know – I think I understand the paratransit change, but for the Route 80s at UW?
Well, when the polar vortex hit once or twice, there were actually school closures both at MMS.
Okay.
And
so it was the same.
So even a day or two, and even though schools open when it's only 20 below, those kinds of cold weather days really impact ridership versus last year.
And I saw in the projects you're looking at counters on some of the UW buses?
We did a pilot of an automated passenger counter at the request of UW. Drew's staff set that up so the Route 80s for a period of time ran without the driver's pump. Or did they push the button when they did that and we compared?
Well, we started having them push the button so we could compare.
Okay. And so what we're hoping to, the goal is eventually to use automated passenger counters exclusively for the Route 80s, because if a driver is dealing with 40 students getting on the bus, it would be easier for him or for her to focus on what's going on around him rather than pushing a button. Is it 32 times? And if you ride, sometimes they're just doing that because they don't have time to actually count. There's a lot going on. And so the UW is open to automated passenger counters, which is what Champaign-Urbana, who went with me on that trip. Other transit systems use automated passenger counters. We've had a few technology problems with them, so before we actually do that for UW, we'd like to make sure we work out the bugs with the technology.
I'm sorry, I'm just curious about, is it pyroelectric, or what technology does it use?
As you get on the bus, there's literally, I call them bicycle reflectors, things that actually are tied into the AVL and everything, and they're recording who gets on, who gets off, and they're recording what bus stop did that happen on and how accurate is it compared to either looking at what the driver did or in some cases Drew's staff will look at the video and say, well, at this stop it says 18 people got on. How many actually got on? Or we can use the video. It's not an efficient way to do it, but it's a reasonable spot check to see how accurate the APCs are.
Other comments or questions for Chuck on this? We need a motion to approve the report.
So moved.
Or accept the report? Motion and a second?
Yeah, second. I'm sorry.
Any discussion?
And I apologize, Patrick, but that screen's off and this one's still on. I don't know what I did.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Chuck, the updated service change proposal?
Yep, I'm going to have somebody sit in the driver's seat in case there's any questions on the graphics. And Drew is going to describe kind of where we are with our recommendations and next steps. And Nick is here in case you have any questions on the public input. We didn't get a lot of last-minute public input, but he can help answer any of those questions.
I wonder why that went off.
All righty, so at the last meeting, we approved the what I call the easy one, the new service to Sun Prairie.
Mike.
Oh, hey, there it is. And, yeah, so we approved the easy one, Route 23, and between that meeting and this one, the proposal for all the restructure routes 31, 34, 39 on the east side got withdrawn. So that one's now off the table, but we are continuing to propose the Route 6 schedule adjustment, the Route 11 service shift to give more coverage to some of those near southwest neighborhoods. Route 25 and 29, there's some limited stop changes, locations for the limited stops. Route 26 has a slightly longer route now and some schedule adjustments. Route 29 is an interesting story. we're showing a fairly drastic revision to that in the packet. We're still recommending that, but if the owners of Northside Town Center, where the park and ride lot is, on the left there, you can see the little loop going in there. If we can, they've expressed the possibility of us maintaining that lease or that easement in there. And if that's the case, I think we would recommend keeping the current routing. However, if we have to get out of that park and ride lot, we'd probably go with the proposed routing. We'll have to know whether we can get back, you know, if we can stay in the Northside Town Center or not by June 6th, is it? I think June 6th. And otherwise, we're going to go with the proposed routing, if that makes sense. The other one is a addition of a trip on Route 84 on the campus circulator. And then the bus stop changes, especially the East Wash at Dickinson, where we've identified some safety issues for people getting across.
So, are you saying that if we made a motion tonight to accept everything, including the proposed Route 29 change, with the provision that if by a certain date, Northside Town Center, renews the easement, we stay with the current one? Is that basically what we want to have happen?
Indeed.
That the default is that we go to the proposed unless you can keep the easement.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, the Northside Council president has been working with the property owner, as well as the alders. The Northside alders have been working with him, and he's apparently made a suggestion anyway that he's going to allow it to remain, but we haven't gotten anything official yet.
And can I ask you,
sure,
Drew, for the Route 11, the proposal for what happens moving stuff over to Broom Street, it's my understanding that that's sort of required in order to get the time on the west side.
Yep.
Right? You can't do the west side unless we also do that.
That is correct.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to go through that again.
No, I remember it. But I was just verifying for tonight that it's a trade-off, that you can't do the one part without doing the other part.
Exactly.
Okay.
We looked at the feedback. I think you guys have it in the packet that the positives, the pros for this change are now 14 against 12 con, which I think is kind of an interesting number. I mean, to have that many pros come out for a proposal like this is great, I think.
Mm-hmm. And all the people who normally, excuse me so much, who normally would have taken it all the way down to the Capitol, they have adequate transit.
Transferability
points. Okay.
Yep. And most of the people west of, say, the University Hospital aren't going to be wanting to ride the 11 all the way down to the square anyway, because then they have to get dragged through past the UW Hospital and through the campus. So it's a kind of a slow boat compared to a lot of the other.
Thanks for reminding me.
Mm-hmm.
And just as a reminder to that, since Tim Sabota is here, he designed the Route 13 change that you approved about 10 years ago so that as the Route 13, as it heads north on Park and is about to turn onto Johnson, it reminds all passengers that the next stop is your transfer to buses on the square, and we will do something like that so that he will have a reminder to folks on the bus so they can hear that, and so they will learn, and eventually it becomes part of the system. And today the concerns about Route 13 not going through the square are down to zero, and that was a big issue 10 years ago.
Yep.
What do you mean the next stop is
Right.
Thank you. On the East Washington Dickinson proposed closure, all I'm seeing in here is the sort of unsafe street crossing. Are there any other reasons why this is being recommended, or is it really just for that?
Well, there's the crossing, and it's also, well, it's an operational issue as well. Coming inbound, the buses, they've stopped at the railroad tracks, and in order to get into the Dickinson stop, they have to pull back out into that rightmost traffic lane and then immediately go right back over to hit that Dickinson stop. Near side there. And then if you look at the outbound side, we've got the stops actually on the same block face, the existing stop at Baldwin and then the Dickinson one. And so part of it is this, that the distances between these stops are an eighth of a mile or less. And so it's part of the trying to keep our schedule reliability up there. If we can thin out the number of stops, that's always a bonus for us with the schedule reliability.
And do they have to be eliminated in a pair? So in other words, the 20 looks both like it has more ridership as well as being more equally spaced versus the 1494 versus 1805. Like you said, it's much closer and less utilized. Would you consider eliminating 1805, but keeping 1494, which is also the one we heard public comment around.
We don't tend to do that if we can help it. It actually ends up causing several layers of confusion in our databases. And also a person who, say, gets off at a stop kind of sort of expects to be able to get on very close to that stop, you know, across the street or whatever. And so we tend to want to have a pair of stops rather than just a single one hanging out there.
And I think last question on it, if, again, what's in here is the difficult unsafe street crossing. So if that were not an issue, would you be recommending the elimination of these for purely operational issues?
I think we would, yep.
Gary?
I guess I'm a little bit confused about, we have the school supplemental service in our packet.
That's an update.
Yeah, it's an update. We don't really.
It's a change in service that they're reporting.
Reporting, not expecting us to act on it.
It's contractual. There's really not anything that we can do about it.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, and we need, when we're reducing service, we need to go through a public hearing. We need to make you aware of it and be very transparent. But that's happening because the school district isn't paying for it.
I would move as proposed for Route 6, Route 11, Route 25, Route 26, Route 29, Route 84, and the bus stop changes, with the provision that if the north, what's the center?
Northside Town Center.
Northside Town Center does allow continued easement, we would withdraw that proposal and continue with the current route.
I'll second that.
Point of clarification. I'm assuming you're including the supplemental school service in that motion as well.
That's going to happen,
it's
right?
Service change. So we're just approving the service change.
Okay, I'll add that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. There, okay.
Yeah, sure. Right. That's a good point.
Yeah. We debated whether we actually needed to bring that here, but since it is a service change, we thought that it was better safe to do that. Okay, so we're requesting approval with the understanding, as Drew indicated earlier, that if that park and ride is still available, that you would withdraw the change on the Route 29.
Correct.
And leave it as is.
Mm-hmm. And you'll know that by the end of June.
Well, we hope we got to know it by the first week of June. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a motion and a second. Further discussion? Grant?
Thanks. Just on the Dickinson one, I guess I would ask maybe in the future, I'm supportive of the sort of operational changing, you know, where it makes sense. I was definitely not supportive of eliminating these stops because of the unsafe nature of that crossing. And I think regardless of these changes, maybe traffic engineering can take a look at that crossing. I'm not willing to give it up and say it's unsafe and we're going to not cross there. But with the clarification that this really maybe is more about operational improvements, then I'm supportive of the change.
Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have our Transportation Commission draft work plan discussion. The document that you have before you incorporated the suggestions that we had from the commissioners and from staff. The changes from the last document are shown in red type. And since we plan to have the work plan for the next year on the agenda at our next meeting for approval, we wanted to bring it as a separate agenda item so that everybody has an opportunity to look at it, talk about it, make sure that we don't have anything else that we want to change on here, with the understanding that, you know, one of the things we discussed in the handbook conversation was we'll look at this work plan at least quarterly going forward, at least that's our plan, so that we'll have an opportunity to make changes at least quarterly going forward, rather than trying to limit ourselves to just once a year. So comments or questions, suggestions relative to the work plan?
I just have a question.
Bridget?
Yeah. One of the things mentioned today was the sort of smart city plan that is, sounds like maybe it's a direction that the city is sort of going. Is that, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but would that fit in? It sounds like something that would encompass a lot of different pieces of what we're charged with doing or at least knowing about. Mm-hmm. Would that fit in with different pieces that are already on here? So, for example, regular reporting from Boy, I'm not sure.
So is the smart city plan considered a special project? That we could perhaps get updates on a periodic basis?
Definitely, yeah. It's, you know, it's an initiative.
Okay.
By the city. Yeah, we can definitely, you know, come here, give the commission an update.
Okay.
What's happening.
Yeah. So we could perhaps add that to the special projects and a review for this work here. Would that be the right place for it?
Yes. That should be good, yeah.
So periodic update on the smart city initiative, and then maybe you can help write a little explanation
sure,
about that.
Sure, we'll do. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Grant, we had talked about adding to the special projects, which is on page 4, review the appropriate process or for review and approval of pedestrians, bicycle, and other traffic enhancements or improvements. It's something that we've had conversations a lot of different in a lot of different contexts. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we've discussed putting on here as a project, something that we could do to review that process so that we're sure that there's appropriate public input and appropriate public review opportunities. So is that something that people feel that we should add to our special projects for this next year?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we do have one item, I believe at one point we have an item talking about the developing, let's see where it is, a new process for us to evaluate these projects. Somehow I don't see them anymore.
We've talked about this as something that we're doing and something that you, I think you've been working on, and you
right.
started working on it with Ped Bike.
Correct. Yeah, we've been working with engineering on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, yeah. So, yeah.
Why
I
don't we look at
sure.
how we can best, you and I can work together on that maybe in terms of,
yeah.
I think I have the document and, you know, at least I have the Word document,
sure.
so
yeah.
I can either get it to you, and
okay.
we can change the red to black and delete the things that need to be deleted so that we have a good document.
Sure.
But I think you understand what we're talking about here.
Correct, yeah. You know, I did have some conversation with Anne and Grant on this. Traditionally, you know, a few programs that we do, the staff does, has been, you know, gone to commissions, different commissions or boards, mainly because those programs were picked out for various reasons. For example, the traffic signal priority list, which is a mechanism for us to consider new traffic signal installations in the city. Those typically has huge financial consideration associated with that, mm-hmm. Ongoing annual maintenance, and has a big impact to the surrounding areas, both benefits and also other side effects, like more traffic on side street. And those, because of that, and also there will be assessment involved in that. So those goes to, you know, go through kind of this public process. Also, you know, another example is the traffic calming project, the neighborhood traffic management program. For that one, you know, that's a larger, it's a smaller investment than the traffic signals, but still a large amount of investment, and also those prices are typically controversial. As you know, this commission has seen mm-hmm. for the speed humps, right? On Space Street, other streets, we got people come here tell us that we really want those, and other folks say no, we don't want those. So that's the reasons we brought the projects in. For the smaller pedestrian bicycle improvement projects, those are typically smaller projects, lower cost, and typically not very controversial. And also we get a lot of them, lots of requests. So there are definitely lots of benefits bringing them to this commission. We can have a, you know, better process, a more transparent process, and we can get inputs from the expertise here in this commission. That's for sure, yeah. However, though, I think, you know, I have been thinking about doing that as well. Over the past year, I have been debating about and thinking about that. In the past, you know, the process is not very transparent. It's authority given by city ordinance to city staff. So it basically, it's administrative decisions by city staff. So the public make a request, we review them, we decide to do them or not, we decide to do what, and then we implement it. So, you know, legally that's fine, but I always feel like, you know, it can be a more transparent process instead of one or two or more staff members just making the decisions, we should have a better system. So over the past year, I gathered a team of traffic engineering staff and city engineering staff together. We worked on a process. That's a process that we mentioned a bit before. I feel like it's a much more transparent and equitable process. Now, you know, we get other inputs and requests from all over the city, and then we have the team sit down and we go through each of them. Not only that, traditionally we get lots of requests from certain areas in the city, not many requests from other areas of the city, as many people don't know how to access the government. So last year we have actively going out to the neighborhoods that traditionally underserved. Those are, I suppose, the NRT, neighborhood resource teams. Mm-hmm. We collaborate with them. We go to their meetings. We go to their events. And we ask people, what can we help? Do you have any needs? So we gather a bunch of project ideas from them that way, can be more proactive. And then, you know, has all those projects together. We gather this team, sit down, and we rank each of them, go through each of them to see what's the best treatment for each location. And we develop a process to rank them based on three main areas. One is safety, one is operations, another is equity. Based on those three areas, we score them, we rank them, and we finalize a project list for 2019 that way. You know, for those projects, some involving install the new flashers, the RFBs, some install the, you know, the permanent speed boards, mm-hmm. some are islands, some are curb bump outs, those kind of smaller things. So I feel like, you know, we have a much better process. And I would be proud if we, you know, go through everything in front of the commission. I think that would look, you know, the city staff looks really good. So I have been thinking about whether to do that or not. But I have to maybe give you guys some heads up that because of volume of those projects, that means if we do that at a commission, that means to add significant amount of work for this commission mm-hmm. as folks come in, making their case, make a comment. So that might be lots of work added to the commission. Two, it also probably adds to the time for state staff to respond to those, as there's one more step involved. We have to get a permission, the approval from the commission to respond to things. So that that probably adds a bit of time to it. Also, the staff has to, you know, prepare more materials, make them looking nice, presentable. Those are some other things we can do that. Another concern that I've been talking with Tarek from the mayor's office, NRT correlator, is the equity issue. You know, one concern we have is that, as we all know, certain population do not traditionally come to these meetings to make their case. Either, you know, they are not aware of it, or they don't have access to the government to know that, don't they even exist, or they just don't have time. It's too busy with their surviving, so they cannot be here. So that may be some difficulty as well. I believe this, you know, this commission, every one of us is you know, have equity in mind, but it's really going to be hard when you have thousands of people here requesting for a project where other group where it's no one arguing for one project. People tend to probably choose a project that has a lot of people coming to the meeting to support that. So those are some of the concerns. I think we should look into the idea. We should discuss it. I will be supporting the idea. If the commission decides to bring those projects to the commission as well, the commission can approve those projects. I think that you know, that's going to be more transparent. Again, I do believe that actually makes the staff looks pretty good. But I'm a little bit. I want you guys to know the whole picture, mm-hmm. So knows what the commission gets yourself into. So I think yeah, I think we should the party you know start discuss that, and if we get to do it next year, we can do we'll do a similar process as traffic calming, but it's probably going to be. Has a much longer list than traffic calming. It's going to be probably more people coming to make a case. So we have to plan for it.
Well, one of the things, mm-hmm. Something came before the Board of Public Works that came to the council last night that related to these things that we were yep. talking about. Mm-hmm. So does that happen just once a year?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's a good question. Last night the Common Council approved a public works contract that includes the traffic calming projects. That it also includes some work for other smaller pipeback projects that I just mentioned. Because for the pipeback projects, a lot of the work handled by city staff, build a concrete base. Put up a pole, an arm, install a flasher, the city by city crew handles that. However, though, when we're dealing with a lot of concrete work, like doing a traffic circle or a speed or islands, it's better to have find a contractor do that. So engineering is responsible for implementing those. And that's why I've been working with them to put those items into the same contract for a traffic calming, for speed humps, for example. So yesterday, engineering did a resolution to approve plan specs for those concrete works associated with those projects. So it went through Board of Public Works, and it was approved by Common Council. Part of that, the traffic calming part, that was approved by this body, but not the pet bike. Some other components would not. Mm-hmm. But those are only small components of the pedal bike project that we mentioned, because lots of those, we have the city crew handles that. Mm-hmm. Install something, or install signing, mm-hmm. do some paper marking, city staff handles all of that. Some small components we build into the public work contracts. Mm-hmm. So that's what that contract was for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the thought process to have it on here to discuss it and just review the process mm-hmm. will allow us to see what's happening and perhaps all we might want to do might be to just see that report every year, not necessarily just on an informational mm-hmm. basis.
Sure.
I don't know mm-hmm. what we'll decide, but I think it's an opportunity for us to know what's happening about something that perhaps we didn't know about.
Right. That, I thought that was already already put into the work plan sometime. Somehow, yeah, it's no longer here.
Okay.
I may delete it somehow.
Okay.
But that was originally the plan.
Okay.
This is the first year we're starting the new process.
Yes, it sounds like a much more inclusive process than it's been in the past, and that's great.
Yeah, and much more objective also, lots more people getting involved. It's not just one person making the calls.
Like it was.
Because when one person makes a call, what often happens is that the group who has the loudest voice typically get the resources. That's, very traditional for city government, by creating this kind of city staff committee, I think we have a better transparent process. But I can tell you, that process will evolve and needs to be improved over the next for the next few years. Because this is the first year, I feel pretty good about it. But I know probably things that we need to improve. For example, when we try to get the data, talking about the I can give two examples. For example, for one of the operations, we look at the ped bike network connection. That data is very hard to get if you're talking about that many locations. So one thing we use is the metro's boarding data, where there's bus stop. We give them more points, but will those be scientific? Probably not. Also, for some equity data that we're trying to gather, those are probably not very scientific, but I think it did help. So, how to improve those things over the years. I think every year probably be an improvement to a point that we feel really, really good at it. For example, traffic calming, that process, that it took the city about a decade to create that process and then perfect the process. So maybe we can get a lot of input from this body for that process as well. Okay. Yeah.
Right. So we'll plan to work with Yang on how to word that so that we can add that to our work plan. I think maybe it was in the spirit of the work plan, but maybe it wasn't called out as it could have been. Are there other things that
just to we don't have to get into the whole discussion of right now. I can say I'll be, I'm a big supporter of making it part of our process. I think there are the challenges, et cetera. But imagine not having the route changes come to this body and having Metro staff just decide them. And I mean, we heard some of the concerns of, is everyone being represented in this public process and the public hearing? And there's maybe opportunities to go on above and beyond that. But it's hard for me to imagine not having a process like that for making changes with Metro routes. And I think for a lot of these things, depending on your mode, if you're someone who really relies on walking or on biking, then some of these that might be minor changes can have a really big impact. So I do think in terms of transparency, I mean, there really isn't transparency even if it's a better process, if it's a staff process and a staff decision. I think it's really important that it does come through a public body, that we do have at least an opportunity for people to weigh in on it. But my main comment is, can we just make sure that we take it up early enough so that if we do decide that it's something that we want to add, that Yang's team has enough time to kind of figure out what the timing and the sequence is, so that it's, that would be one of the negatives, right, is just having to think about that extra kind of review process. But I think as long as earlier, you should be able to kind of schedule that work more appropriately, maybe over the end of the year and winter, and kind of be prepared for whenever we think.
Definitely, earlier if we try to do it, the earlier the better, so
the
staff can prepare for it. Also, another thing is we have to make sure if we do this, we have to make sure that we notify everybody. That's going to give a lot of people to notify, because otherwise you all say, others got a chance to make their case. Why don't we get a chance to go to public?
There's a lot of factors that will have to.
So the earlier we can make that decision, that'll be better. Still, I think there's going to be, a lot of things to figure out.
But just again, related to in terms of that timing, and maybe a comment on the work plan here. So quarter two, we have the traffic signal priority list preliminary review and selection, and then quarter three is the approval.
Mm-hmm.
Quarter three is also the approval of the neighborhood traffic management program, but we don't have sort of a preliminary review like we do for the signal in the previous quarter. And again, sort of the metro process, to me, I found it really good to have a public hearing, sort of, you know, calm, have an opportunity for some questions, maybe make some changes to the recommendations, and then come back and kind of vote on them the next month, I guess, in this case. So one of my questions is, is there any value to kind of mirroring that process where maybe you come in quarter two, give both the preliminary list of signals as well as the preliminary list of traffic calming, et cetera, with the staff recommendations? We can have some conversation and then kind of move to approve those at a later meeting.
Yeah.
And so in terms of if we did go that route, in my mind it would make sense to put this kind of broader ped bike enhancement review connected with those same things, since they're all very, very connected. So sometimes there'll be a request for a signal, and maybe ultimately the decision is, let's not put a full signal, but let's do some crosswalk enhancements or signage or other things.
There were
things.
Two examples of that in
yep.
the packet. There.
And so I think doing those things kind of in concert, it's not necessarily saying we're not going to approve this on the signal, but rather you could have, here are all the requests we've gotten, and here's the recommended treatments, including maybe nothing is a recommendation, but it would be an opportunity, I think, to kind of look at it a little bit more holistically, and like you said, just pick the right treatment or the right recommendations that's not just signal or traffic calms. It could be a lot of other things that in the past haven't really come through here. So stop sign installation, warning signage, marking changes, islands, bump outs, all these other that are really meant to address the same problem or the same public concern.
So Yang, this
yep.
this year
yep.
we actually took it in two
Correct.
Steps.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember if it was quarter two and then quarter three, but we did mm-hmm. do it in two steps this
Correct.
Last
yeah.
year. How did that work out okay?
So that's a very good question. And this year, as I mentioned, we did a two-step process.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we did that is because this is a relatively new body, and quite many members hasn't dealt with before. So we want the members an opportunity to think about it and then make a decision at the next meeting. So I have to admit that I think it's doable, but it does put a bit more pressure on staff. Because on one hand, we have to wait. We typically do this near the end of the year, so we can catch all the late requests.
Mm-hmm.
If the latest request comes for a year, we don't want them to wait for a full year. So we want them to catch the kind of the last train, still being able to consider for the year's construction season.
Mm-hmm.
And then we need to, once this has been approved by this commission, we are not done yet. Actually, I have a chart made for the process for the new order orientation a few weeks ago talking about this. So there's quite many steps involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
So after this commission approves it, that's actually, we're still even halfway through the process. So initially, we get the requests. Because of the controversial nature of it, we send out a kind of a petition for the neighbors to sign.
Mm-hmm.
If we know that there is a support for it, we're going to spend resources to do it. And then we gather data, do studies, and we put a ranking together. That's just a list of ranking. And then we present this to this body, and this body approves it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this body approves. So so the difference for this process from the signal priority list is that for signal priority list, this body first review the list and then pick out the intersections to be most promising ones for a study.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the second meeting, this body approves the intersections that are signalized.
Mm-hmm.
typically, you know, two or three or one, sometimes zero each year. For private commune, though, because of controversial nature of it, this body only approves the rankings, the list of it. So what after this body approves it, we'll go off the list to see how much funds we have and how much meets the minimum requirements. That's a 30, we need a 30 points to do that. And then we pick, we go along, you know, from the top to bottom along that list. We stops, either we run out of funds or we stops until no one meets the points, which is if 29 points, we're not going to do it. From there, we develop more detailed plans, showing exactly where the speed humps will be. Or sometimes we develop two, three options, speed humps, traffic islands, traffic circles, and then we work with the neighborhood, let them pick which one they want. And we'll do a final survey. Because it takes time for people to think about it, and they also change their opinions as well. The final survey, we have to earn 60% of support from the residents or business that have to support it before we you know, do the project. Sometimes the project got a support from the neighbors, and so we will go for a count. Final design, do a public work contract, get it done in the field. But oftentimes, it will stop that stage because the neighbors look at it and they had, you know, they discuss with each other. They said, no, I'm not going to support it. So, for example, for this the 2019, the list you guys approved, six speed humps didn't make it to the construction. Although you guys approved it, but the neighbors opposed it. Although some neighbors already wanted, but it didn't go to 60%. So six speed humps didn't make it to the construction stage. Even the one, and also there is one on Space Street right now. There's some because Metro was not able to sing out of the stops. They had some concern about timing issue. So I'll visit revisiting one over there as well. We're working with the neighbors and other person on that one as well. So that's kind of the challenges. So there's a lot of work. The point is that there's a lot of work to be done after this body approves it to, you know, get it finally approved and then get constructed. So we definitely want it to be approved by this body early enough so we have all the time to do other things. But with that said, I do think we can bring this body to, you know, do a, you know, two-step process for that as well. Traditionally, we have only done one meeting, but we can look into doing two. But I think we have to be extra careful about our sequencing, timing, so that we still have time to get it done.
So based
if the commission, you know, supports the idea of doing a two-step process, I think we can do it.
Actually, I just wanted to maybe put something else out there. Something else to consider is us reviewing, maybe instead of, or some combination, you know, lists that have been arrived at. What I know what I'd be more interested in is the model that's used, or the criteria for the point system.
We did review that.
That's behind that, but on a regular basis, because I think it's, I'm assuming, you know, there are things that change and, you know, looking at those different, you know, safety operations and equity, you're going to probably be considering tweaks to those as you learn more, as, you know.
That's a great point, yeah.
Things are developed, and so, you know, having a better, I guess, more checks on that system should lead to, hopefully, more efficiency in the process.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we did actually make some recent changes to it. For example, some of the more equity considerations.
Right.
Yeah. So it's I think it's a good, you know, that process was created by the previous Transporting Commission, when the previous Transporting Commission still exists. And, you know, we operate without Transporting Commission for a couple of decades. now we have a transportation commission again. So yeah, it's up to this commission to you know, tweak that that process. Yeah, we're all work to it.
Let me make a suggestion. It sounds like from a timing standpoint, you may not know about the various projects that the neighborhoods bring forward for consideration until the end of the year. So perhaps we can do what I think we did last time, which is have a two-step process, a preliminary review and then the final review and approval, all within quarter three, which would provide more transparency in that we would have a review of the process, because we do have some turnover in commission members, and the public is always you know, welcome to come and hear about that process. And then, you know, similar to the bus stop review, if we have initial discussion, review of the process and initial discussion at one meeting, and then actually approve it at the next meeting, then we'll have that transparency of letting the public know what's going on. Anybody who wants to come can come and talk about it. Everybody will be familiar with the process, any changes in the process, and then we make the decision at the next meeting. So it wouldn't have to be spread very far apart. We could keep the timing tight so that you get all of the requests in, and we can handle it all within the same quarter. Would that make it more feasible to stay on your timeline?
Definitely. Yeah.
I think it would accomplish what you want to accomplish, what you want to accomplish, and what you want to accomplish.
You know, it may be tough with timing.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the criteria here and then list development and then list approval.
But I think it's workable.
But
okay. So maybe what we could do, Yang, is just have it on here as one thing and say that it's basically a two-step approval and talk about it that way. Or we could put it on, I mean, however we handle it, either have two bullet points or just have, you know, sub bullet points underneath there saying that it's a two-step process, so we get that added transparency.
Sure. We could, I mean, I think the kind of metric review or process review could also, and might be helpful to happen separate from, so maybe like 6 months before this process, or, you know, it could still happen like a once-a-year review, but maybe not like the meeting right before, because that way if there are updates to it, you guys would have time to make those changes and then use it for the...
Yeah. One thing I would caution, though, what we found is people, when they're making the decision, they want it, like, fresh in their mind so that they know what is the process and what are we considering and what are we doing. I mean, that's what I heard this last time around when we were looking at it, was everybody really wanted to know what is this that we're making a decision on. Like with the safe school thing, people want... Give us a presentation right before we make the decision so we're familiar with it. So I just caution
maybe
you.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding the kind of what I was hearing and what I've thought before. So even like the signal, the warrant system and where how we distribute points or for the crossing guard stuff. I mean, these we have separate from reviewing thumbs up, thumbs down on a specific crossing, which is an annual process.
Right.
In the old days, not on an annual basis, but we did review the tool and
right.
the process. And
right.
so I think that's kind of what I was hearing. And I think that's a good idea. I think it would be difficult if we did that in a meeting and it might not even be done in one meeting. But if we did that then expect the next meeting that the sort of already implemented and used to produce a new list.
It didn't take too long. I thought it went very well. And what I think might end up happening is we might end up doing it again right before we make the decision, because everybody wants that. I mean, when you're talking about the traffic signal priority list, everybody asks that question. What is this? How does this all work? So when I'm looking at this report, help me understand. So I just caution that I think we might end up doing it twice then. So why don't we look at that as, well, how can we make that into a two-step, possibly three-step, whatever you think might work. Okay. Other comments?
Sure,
go ahead.
So kind of based on the conversation we had tonight about the police department quarterly traffic report, I would say at a minimum, can we change the name to help emphasize what it is that we're wanting to do there? Or perhaps I was really keen on the concept of kind of a focus on safety and sort of integrating the information that we can get from the police department as well as what their kind of priorities or areas of focus are. Also with the crash data, et cetera. So
right now, I think we've done the annual review of the crash report, mm-hmm. and I notice in here there's like a maybe 6 months later an update on that.
Mm-hmm. For the analysis we talked about. How about if we call it the quarterly traffic safety report?
Exactly, right, and that we can maybe then actually kind of take out some item, but like on a quarterly basis, kind of do both of those things with less focus just on citations and more focus on that connection point to the safety or the crash report.
This isn't changing the plan, but if you, Yang, can maybe meet with the officer and figure out which of those different things that are listed for violations are the most susceptible to an external engineering intervention. And, you know, I'm even looking, for example, on speeding. If you're going 70 on the Beltline, we're not going to put any speed bumps on the Beltline. We're not going to make the lanes narrower or anything like that. That's just something that we don't like, and it has to be an officer in a car who makes that determination. So not that I'm saying they need to do it, but my guess is they have a map of where those speeding violations are. They have dots, probably, and those dots, my guess is half of them are on the Beltline or on East Washington out by East Town or anyway. I mean, there are certain parts which we're not going to do. If, on the other hand, they're on northbound Midvale near Mineral Point coming down the hill or something like that, those are more traffic engineering kinds of things where we've already tried to use flashing you're going too fast signs and things like that, that maybe we need to think about how do we better do that. So I think speeding is also a couple of different things. One, you know, not that we don't care about the Beltline, but if the main ebb and flow is Beltline enforcement, that's a different thing. And I wasn't even thinking about that for the up and down, as opposed to sort of neighborhood near cross, you know, school crossings and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, you know, one thing that's kind of interesting is it's kind of, you know, sometimes it's chicken and egg. You know, sometimes we have the enforcement data. We know how many speeding tickets issued for different locations. So maybe kind of use engineering means trying to intervene that. Mm-hmm. However, though, sometimes that location get more tickets because people complain about the speeding because maybe very frequently, it might be just far away from traffic engineering to them because we noticed the speeding over here. We may not have really good tools for us to use.
Mm-hmm.
MPD, can you do more enforcement here? We see a lot of tickets or warnings given at those locations. So I think it's kind of correlated. And but I think Ken had a really good idea that we should explore that.
Because otherwise, I think the burden shouldn't be on the officer to come up with what data do we need. I think the burden is on us to say, here's the things that we really are in our strike zone, you know, and the other things we care about, but we can't do anything about it, so let's just focus on the data that we can.
Yeah, and why collect the data if we're not going to use it? And that point was made, well made.
Yeah.
So why don't you meet with Dave and then maybe come back to us and say this, say this is what we're thinking about, and then hopefully that can help him out.
Definitely, we'll definitely
help us out too.
I do agree. There's a lot of things that we can rethink and improve.
Mm-hmm.
We should give all of us a pat on the back as well. You know, we're actually doing very well on safety, traveling safety. We're constantly ranked as one of the, you know, the top safety cities. Mm-hmm. Most recent ones last year, were ranked as the second safest city for pedestrians in the United States. But that's still, we still have a lot of room to improve. But other locations are probably, even worse. We should continue to the city, you should continue to strive to make things better. And I think we have lots of room to improve. And this body is very helpful. Thank you for that.
Well, I think calling it the traffic mm-hmm. safety report really gets across what we're trying to achieve. And we don't have much detail in the description here, and mm-hmm. we'll just, update that data collection so that it's useful. So great, great conversation, a really good discussion about that in particular.
And
yeah.
Just to know if you were done or not.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Two other things. One is something to consider for quarter four, I think, would be one of the recommendations from the subcommittee that worked on improving bike maintenance.
Okay.
Maintenance of bike facilities in the city.
Uh-huh.
It had a particular focus around winter maintenance, and one of the recommendations was to get an annual report out from it's really a kind of combined public works team that takes care of snow removal for the, especially for the path network, but get a report in terms of kind of how the winter went, what the kind of number and type of report of problems that they received related to kind of snow and ice issues, maintenance related transportation issues, so that this body could be sort of an oversight body to see, okay, great, what did we learn?
Okay.
What ideas are there for improving things in the future? So that was discussed with, really streets, parks, and engineering that'll have a role in that work. So we could maybe touch base with like Kathy Cryan or Lisa from Parks as to confirm that they'd be okay with that. But I think that would be a important thing for this body to take up.
So could we call it Report on Winter Bicycle Facilities Maintenance? Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay.
If it's possible, could we get in there? I'd really like to have more information about the equipment that's used for that, and if it's at all possible, the cost for that specialized equipment.
I can give a little bit of an update in the next section when we do the GPPB update.
Sure.
One last thing on this,
uh-huh.
on the special projects, I think page four.
Okay.
Just in terms of the safety issues related to bicyclists wearing earbuds or talking to cell phones.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if we could maybe just broaden that a little bit to talk about maybe also people that are walking or driving, if the focus is kind of distracted. Riding is what I'm reading here. It might be more helpful to just kind of broaden that out to some of the other modes as well.
Okay, so related to bicyclists, motorists, and pedestrians?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Distracted.
Yeah.
And I think distracted behaviors. Yeah, good.
Well, I hear some places are making distracted walking against the law.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm in.
Swearing off walking.
Yeah. Distracted walking. You can do undistracted walking, but apparently not distracted.
Well, I think especially having that conversation with the kind of Vision Zero lens that Tom mm-hmm. Lynch has been introducing. I don't know if he did that here or just to
you. He did.
I think it's, with that focus, what's the end result of that distraction? Does it lead to bumping into a pole or running someone over? What are those?
Chuck indicated that the Metro drivers say that it's an issue. So from a safety standpoint, that they're concerned about that. So, certainly happy to make that change. Other things that you had, Grant?
I think that was it. Sorry, I had so many to.
Yeah, no, that's good.
I have a request for an annual plan thing. Sorry. So this is Yang. Think of the number of places now where we have negative feedback on speed, right? So, like, you go down Old Sauk Road past Crestwood, right? The sign only activates if you're going fast, right? I mean, for the most part. Yeah. And so this is, pretty paternalistic, probably grandparent paternalistic or Little League coach paternalistic. But in Little League, you have to catch kids in the act of doing something right three times. So there's a lot of things about positive reinforcement. And so I think about, the sign at Mineral Point on Mintdale,
you know, where it says you're going too fast or whatever. What if you had a positive reinforcement thing that says, I mean, I'm just being silly here, good job.
You're not breaking the law.
You're obeying the law.
Aren't there? I mean, some of the ones you're doing good. You're doing good.
Is there some kind of thing that's going on in other parts of the United States or the world? Because I think otherwise it is we're missing an opportunity. I mean, I just am putting it out there that just having a sign flashing when you're going fast, as opposed to, oh, they notice that I'm approaching that intersection at a safe speed, as opposed to the flashing light. I just would like, if you have an hour or something, to send somebody up to Google and just say, has anybody ever tried that as far as saying a positive reinforcement? Because I think otherwise people get... I mean, I think a lot of people going on that part of Midvale, for example, just get used to it. It's flashing all the time. It just is always saying too fast, too fast. And there's no way you can get it to change its mind. Anyway. Could you do that sometime? Is there a thing of positive reinforcement as far as traffic goes?
Well, apparently, I'm looking on Google,
Well, good. Well, any other comments?
Thank you for all doing all this. I mean, it's really helpful to have.
Well, Yang is the one who created the document, and I've just made some changes along the way. I do this for you, Yang? Make the red changes black and take out the strikeouts, and I'll send it to you to make some of the other changes we've talked about.
Sounds good. Yeah, you add anything you'd like to add, and I'll take care of the rest.
Or I can maybe put some placeholders in for you.
Sure.
With what I have, and then we can compare notes. Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. That's my assignment. Any other comments on that? Okay. Then we have topics and date for the joint meeting with the Transportation Commission and the Transportation Policy and Planning Board. And then obviously the next one after that is the update from Grant with regard to the last TPPB meeting that we had. So we talked about maybe early July being a possibility for a joint meeting. There's a Transportation Policy and Planning Board meeting on July 1st. Now, I know this wasn't on your agenda at the last meeting, Grant, so I don't know that you guys talked about this at all.
Positive. Megan told me that they'd be willing to do the 10th.
You're good.
And there's a couple scholarly.
Oh, our July 10th meeting?
Yeah. Pretty good.
Okay. So it sounds like it very possibly the July 10th meeting might be the joint meeting. So in terms of topics, wanted to get your thoughts on that. What we did last time was budget was a main focus of that and the new ordinances, because they were all new last year, so budget's on there, and BRT is a natural because that's something that the policy board is certainly in charge of, and we're always interested in that. But what other ideas do you have for topics for a joint meeting?
I have two thoughts, and this is the first one is way too lengthy, but I'm sure someone can make it sound better. Trends and known factors affecting the future of transportation in Madison.
Say it again, Bridget.
So trends and known factors affecting the future of transportation in Madison. So what are some things that we have to think about for the future, whether it's changes in population, the aging of population, disabilities, and other, you know, accessibility considerations, things like that. Some examples, but I think there's some things that we know about the future of Madison and some things that we know about trends in population changes that, you know, are things that we should start thinking about in the future.
Okay.
The other one is, I mentioned it earlier, that electric bicycle legislation. So it's passed, it looks like it will likely pass this session. It's even within the city of Madison, there's been kind of a interesting history on the interpretation of
laws at the state and federal level surrounding electric bikes. And I think that in the near future is something that is going to really need to be tightened up in the city in terms of what is legal, what is not legal, and how is it going to be enforced in the city of Madison.
Other ideas?
I think just on that one, too, and I know the topic of e-scooters and other, like, similar, it might be worth kind of talking about those. There's different implications for them and different laws, but, and I know, you know, we're not talking about a pilot or anything, but just what do we see coming and what are the implications? I know we've done those in the past.
And there is legislation that is also probably going to pass regarding electric scooters as well.
One that I would like to add separate from that is, you kind of mentioned, I think last year was sort of the first, it's been about a year, right, since the reorg?
It'll be a year in July.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think actually just a check-in on that, what do these two new bodies think of this reorg? There's, you know, people that were on some of the old bodies, and then I think specifically, you know, we have the ordinance and we've got the things that are listed, but I think some sort of a presentation on or conversation about kind of what that split is between the bodies, and maybe not so much like specific, but more just kind of reviewing the intent of that separation, the sort of policy and planning versus the commission.
It's not as separate as people see
that
it is.
And being, you know, being sort of the accountable person to try and liaise between, I want to make sure I've got clarity as much as possible. We all kind of have shared expectations about what those are. And then I would say even, another big part of that, of the reorg, of the Transportation Ordinance Review Committee, also related to touch points with planning or with engineering, Board of Public Works. And so I think also just kind of reviewing in terms of expectations and processes, sort of what should be going through Transportation Commission. So we kind of talked about that tonight with some of the engineering elements, right? And so we can work through that. At sort of towards the end of Ped Bike Motor Vehicle, there was, we had some specific things like, okay, engineering for collector and arterial projects, bring them here at a 30% design phase. So that was like a whole discussion and an agreement that we're going to do that. You know, my understanding since the ordinance rewrite around what's this body's role and what's Board of Public Works' role for a transportation project, I think it'd be good to review that and just get some clarity. So I think there's probably even for engineering staff, for example, you know, as they're working on a project, if they bring something here, then they go out and have more public meetings. If there are, you know, significant changes or what somebody might think are significant changes, should they come back here with that, kind of get approval, or is that something the Board of Public Works should deal with? And so, you know, there was a lot of conversation, again, in that TORC group about kind of the intent and what should Board of Public Works be focused on, which, you know, in my mind, it's kind of that overall project. It's the cost, it's the schedule, it's the assessments, it's those sorts of elements. But my understanding is this body should really be driving the decisions and the recommendations around
the geometrics,
right, and how the role that it plays in transportation. So I think maybe having that conversation with TPPB and TC as a starting point, and then kind of just maybe providing some overall clarity so that we kind of have less of those potential misses.
Mm-hmm. Anything else from you guys? The parking study, I'm real interested in what's happening with the parking study, but that might be like too early stages. If it's at too early stages, then it might be, you know, maybe next year or at some point during the year we could ask for an update on that.
Right, haven't started yet, so.
Yeah, so.
It may be too early.
So too early for that. But it's a huge project, and right. I'd be interested in at least one update along the way. Mm-hmm. So other things for that meeting? Okay, great. So we'll look to planning out our meeting so that we're sure that we don't have something else that we thought we needed to be doing on July 10th, or if we need to have a Transportation Commission meeting, we could maybe meet first before the joint meeting if there's some work that we need to get done. So we'll work to figure that out. Okay. How about an update from Grant on last transportation policy planning board meeting?
There was some conversation around, two kind of sort of South Park side related elements. So one was reviewing the Triangle Monona Bay neighborhood plan, which is being or was being reviewed tonight at Board of Public Works as well, and I think is expected to be on the next Common Council agenda, and just some conversations about changes to that area and streets, et cetera. The winter bike maintenance. So there's been several presentations and conversations at TPPB from, again, streets, who does primarily the on-street facilities, and then parks and engineering. Parks does basically east side, and engineering does west side of the arterial path network. So some good information presented about some of the things they've been working on. And at the last meeting, there was an actual proposal. So one of the recommendations from this work group was to, right now, the practice, I wouldn't say it's really a policy, we don't really have a policy, but the practice is that engineering and parks prioritizes and works to clear the arterial paths Monday through Friday, basically before the morning commute and potentially before the evening commute. But then if there's a big storm on Friday evening, there's really no expectation that they'll get to it at all until Monday morning.
Oh.
And so, as you can imagine, you know, depending on the year, that could be an issue a couple times or four times, or right. Mm-hmm. And like this last winter was a pretty bad one, and especially with some of the ice storms. And
right.
So that means all the ped bike bridge overpasses, you know, could potentially be glare ice with no treatment or anything. So I think TPPB is really interested in moving that forward. And so right now it's looking at sort of the budget numbers and what would it take. So we're working with staff there. But I think once we kind of get that recommendation pulled together, maybe we could do like, maybe they could come and do a condensed version of kind of that overall, just for this body, if there's interest, to say, here's kind of what we do, here's where we're headed, because that might give the context then for those annual reviews that I talked about.
Well, particularly since Transportation Commission is involved in the implementation of those policies,
mm-hmm.
and if we're going to be the body that's going to need to review the reports, it would be great to have an update.
Yeah. And then I think there's a little bit of an introduction from Tom Lynch around these kind of two ideas. One is called modal hierarchy, and the other one's street typology. So modal hierarchy is the concept of kind of how do we prioritize within the mode. So a lot of cities have adopted policies that say we're going to prioritize, you know, pedestrians first, then buses or bikes, or buses and bikes, then cars or single occupancy or taxis, and then maybe, right? It's kind of a framework to use as for a body like this, when you get a project in front of you and there's some alternatives, how do you start to make those decision points around what, you know, should we have the wider sidewalk or the buffered bike lane or the parking lane or what? So modal hierarchy looks at that, and then street typology is looking more at having like a bus street or a bus priority street, and what does that street look like? What are the features of that street? Kind of what's a model of it, and starting to identify where we might want to have these different types of street in our overall transportation system. I think that as it gets developed, maybe by the TPPB, I think once there's kind of some forming around which way we want to go or how we're going to use it, that would be really important, I think, to bring here as a framework to help with decision-making on the actual projects. And then I think the last thing that we had was there's an RFP out for the Truman Olson site on South Park Street, which the city owns. It was sort of connected with the SSM site. There was concerns about losing a grocery. So in all of that, there was in the RFP, there's a requirement to kind of build a new east-west street through that block. And so there was some conversation about the recommendations from some earlier plans and kind of what that looks like. So I think at this point, we're just looking, we'll wait to see what comes in on the RFP, and there's some different alternatives that could be considered for what that street looks like, how it connects with the rest of the city, and then, you know, if there is if there's some development happening, I would expect that would then come back here to look at the geometrics of that new street and the intersection, et cetera.
Great, thank you. It's good to have a joint number.
Right.
very good. Okay, so you get the reports of the other committees. Certainly take a look at those. The minutes from the policy board are there in the other groups. So we move on to general announcements by the chair. I just want to, Yang mentioned last time that there's a Transportation and Innovation Expo at the Alliant Energy Center tomorrow. Unfortunately, I've got conflict, so I'm not able to go. But I know you're doing one of the breakout sessions, and some other folks from the city are as well. If you just want to go and check out the vehicles, you can do that for free. If you want to participate in the breakout sessions and have lunch, that's $65. But anybody can come and just check out the vehicles. So just a reminder that
the parking is free.
Parking's free. Nice.
Yeah, we cannot make them to free up the breakout sessions, but parking is free.
Yeah.
We're going to have to review that.
You're going to review that.
All right. Good.
You know what? Can I? I don't know if it's out of order at this point.
We're going to have future agenda items related to that. Okay.
Sure.
All right.
I'll make a quick announcement as well.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I think Grant knows about this very well. So recently, there is an organization called People for Bikes. It's a group kind of for both bike advocacy and also kind of an alliance of the bike industry. So they did a report and rank all the cities in the United States for their bike friendliness, and Madison is ranked as the number 9 among the over 500 cities in the country. So that that's pretty good recognition, but also tells us we have a lot of long way to go.
One
yeah, one area we're lacking is the acceleration. We'll work on that.
No, that's great.
Well, that's a good recognition.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so future agenda items.
It was supposed to be an I. I think we went so fast by it. So I'm also on the Madison Area Transportation Planning Board.
Oh, those are just a review of the minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, my understanding, that one is just what we do is we save the minutes out there in Legistar for us to do that. So we don't usually talk about those. It's just out there for information. Yeah. So if there is something.
I don't know about it. I'm not going to tell you. That's fine.
Well, I mean, if we want to do it as part of announcements by the chair, I'll yield my time to you if you have an announcement there. Go ahead.
Sure. There was a presentation by WISDOT on a potential plan to add, to convert the inside shoulders, so by the median, to be peak hour travel lanes.
Oh.
And a request for additional money to be able to do that. So that was just, there was a kind of brief presentation that was given to the MPO, and there's an opportunity for public comment on that right now, and there could potentially be a decision around it at the next meeting. So I think kind of a big deal, and just wanted to make sure you guys were aware of it.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Corey, you wanted to talk about the bike week?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, we have bike week. Oh, we mentioned that a little bit last time, so we should remind everybody.
Yeah, June 1st through the 8th, and the council just passed a resolution, so it's official with a seal. And if you can go to madisonbikes.org, and there's a section for bike week, and it has all of the events. I think we're up to 40 or so, so a lot of like commuter stations, and there'll be a press conference out here on that Monday. With a City of Madison ride, so elected officials and staff are going to participate and kind of come meet together here with a bike station also that the city's or traffic engineering I think is kind of sponsoring. Lots of fun events, and it's all free. I think. should be fun. And Ride the Drive is part is kind of that Saturday as well.
Okay. Good. Okay. Relative to future agenda items, the June 12th meeting, I've got the quarterly parking report that was pushed from this meeting, approval of our work plan for the next year, approval of the Transportation Commission handbook. Hopefully we'll have that ready to go. Analysis of the 2017 crash report, although that might happen in July. I have that note. And the Safe Routes to School program presentation. We talked about that possibly being in June. Any other items for future agendas that people have that we haven't discussed? We've covered a lot of ground tonight.
Of trapping gear in toolbox.
The toolbox, we talked about waiting for the toolbox till we have our two new members.
Yeah.
So that we could cover that all at the same time.
The 2019 PEB bike, the informational version of what was approved by the council on Tuesday. I think we're going to do that in June, was the idea.
Oh, yes. I do have that written right here. I missed that. Information on that. You know what we talked about earlier? The traffic calming we had reviewed, but there were some pedestrian and bicycle enhancements that were approved at the council last night. So we're just going to bring that that packet here. So that can be one of the ways that we start talking about the process. So we have that on. I had sent you that information, Patrick. Mm-hmm. I even have the Legistar file number here, so I saved that so we can make sure we get that. So we'll do that at the next meeting as well. Thanks for that reminder. Okay, and then if we don't need the end of June meeting, we'll go ahead and cancel that. So we'll see. At this point, I don't have anything on that meeting. So
either way, yeah.
We'll see.
The question for follow-up will not be ready.
Oh, so that should be in July?
Yeah, maybe later even. Okay. As we are working, we're using new system to rank in that development.
Okay.
And I believe we should confirm, but I believe the recommendation was to refer that the 300 block of Wilson geometry to Transportation Commission. So I'm assuming that did happen tonight, so that that would be on the
next meeting then. Patrick always watches for that stuff.
Yeah. So you know what all might be on next month.
Good. Okay, Kevin, you know how to do that in Legistar. Any other future agenda items? Okay. All right. Anybody willing to move that we adjourn?
I will move that.
Motion? Is there a second? Motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Oh.